You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 59 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. A very special author with me joins all the way from Australia. She is the author of Oscar the Unstoppable that we're going to talk about later on in the program. A huge welcome to Simone Rist. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
No, thanks so much for coming on. I think as we were talking a little bit beforehand, we have sort of tried to get this going for a while. So I'm very, very happy to get you on. And I've had a lot of requests from people saying, you really need to get Simone on. You really need to get her on. I'm like, I'm trying. I'm definitely trying. We will manage it. And today we have. So I am delighted, absolutely delighted to be joined by you. Now, we did mention that you are the author of Oscar the Unstoppable, and we will talk about that most definitely a little bit later on. But first of all, would you like to explain who Oscar is?
Yes, absolutely. So is my son. He's my firstborn child. He is 7 years old in April. And he was diagnosed with Hirschsprung's a couple of days after birth. So I had a complicated pregnancy and was closely watched up until Oscar was born. It was probably about day two. He wasn't feeding. We had pediatrics come in and examine and kind of assess. And they were like, no, he's fine to be discharged. And the midwife was actually the one who was really concerned. And she actually had mentioned Hirschsprung's at the time. She said, oh, I'm feeling like, you know, he's not feeding. He's got these symptoms. Have you heard about Hirschsprung's disease? And I said, no, I haven't. At that point, I was so sleep deprived. I just wanted to go home. I was feeling quite frustrated. He was then transferred to nursery and he was started to be tube fed. And he immediately kind of had these reactions and started vomiting. And that's when we were transferred to the Perth Children's Hospital, which is about 45 minutes from where we live. And so at that point, I had already been in hospital about 6 days, and he was transferred on day three or four. We were after his birth. And so we'd gotten to the Perth Children's Hospital quite late at night on a Saturday night, you know, it was skeleton staff. And they said, you've got to wait till Monday for a biopsy. And in our heads, we were like, what do you mean we have to wait until Monday? So on the Monday, they did a biopsy and they didn't get the results back, I think, for a couple of days. But at that point, they were like, look, we're pretty certain it's Hirschsprung's. We're going to book in for the surgery. And it wasn't until the following week. So Oscar was 13 days old when he had his surgery. And leading up to that point of his surgery day, we were doing lots of research. We were trying to find out more, what was this disease that all these doctors were telling us about? And, you know, the doctors would come around once a day, you know, do their checks. We'd have nursing throughout the day, but it was such a limited time. You couldn't ask them questions, or if you did, you felt like you were imposing on the next person's time. So my husband and I were trying to do as much research as we could, and we were just, my husband was reading medical journals. He is very knowledgeable himself in terms of, he's a researcher, so he was kind of doing all of this research trying to find out. I was like, no, I don't want, and I'm very much a personable person, so I'm like, I don't want research journals. I want people's experiences. I want to know a lived experience as to what's happening for families and, I want to hear from everyday life people. I couldn't find anything at the time. So, surgery day came around and we were becoming more knowledgeable on it and just having longer discussions with the medical staff. And so leading up to that point, he was having bowel washouts every kind of 6 to 12 hours. And he was responding well to feeds. So they thought, they had said to us in the lead up, oh, look, his surgery is probably going to be about 4 hours. We think he's got, a really short segment in terms of that needs to be removed. So he went in for surgery at 1 p.m. in the afternoon. We were like, okay, cool. We'll be back here at, five-ish, we'll be back on ward, et cetera. So we went home for a little bit just to kind of regroup and get more of our belongings, because at that point we'd already been in hospital for 2 weeks, hadn't been home, hadn't really kind of paid much attention to our dog, and so we kind of regrouped and the 5 o'clock mark came and we hadn't had a phone call, and then 6 o'clock, and then I think we got a phone call around 6 or 7 o'clock saying it was still going to be a couple more hours. And at that point we were like, so does this mean he's going to have a bag? Does this mean he is going to have, short segment? And at that point they couldn't really tell us. So what they were doing was biopsing every 1 centimeter of his bowel to determine, running it off to the lab, coming back, waiting for the results. Yes, there's living ganglion cells, or no, there isn't. So they did that up to the point of the transverse colon, and they said that was their last opportunity, the last biopsy that they did before they would have had to put a stoma bag in. So he had living cells just before his transverse, so he didn't end up having a bag. And so his surgery in total was 8 hours. And I guess I think it was around 20 or 25 centimeters that was removed. So we ended up back on ward with him about 9:30 p.m. And then he had another just over about a week and a half of recovery. And definitely those kind of 2 days after his surgery, it was quite different to see him recovering from all the medication that he would have had, et cetera. And then post that, we were actually discharged on his due date, which was a very special kind of experience. And then we got home, and it was really surreal because there was no beeping, there was no daily obs, there was no or 3 hourly obs. It took us a while to kind of get back into home life, and then we actually had to be back at the hospital every week for checkups. And then we started the dilation process, which went on for about, it was about 11 months. And I understand now there's actually been a big shift in how long dilation now occurs for compared to when Oscar was young. It's quite a shorter stint now. So we were spending a lot of time at the hospital. But at that point here in WA, our children's hospital was actually being upgraded. And so we had this experience of where he was on ward. And then when we were going back for appointments, we were at this brand new hospital. It's just state of the art, a beautiful, amazing hospital. So it was a really nice transition, because then all of our hospital appointments were a really different experience for us and for him. And it kind of feeling like a fresh start, and we're on the road to recovery, et cetera. So yeah, he had kind of weekly, fortnightly, monthly appointments up until he was about 18 months old, 2 years, and then he was transferred to the like a colorectal intensive team, where they've got a variety of professionals on their team, and they were kind of 3 monthly, then 6 monthly, and now they're currently yearly appointments. So he's still involved in that team. We've actually got an appointment coming up soon. So it's been an interesting journey, and for us as parents, learning along the way all the different hurdles that we were faced with, but all the different wins as well, and just learning about the disease and connecting with other parents, I think has probably been the biggest win for us, and learning more about the disease from lived experiences, and having that connection with others is just incredible. There was a time in his life where it was about the age of, between the age of about 2 to 3 and a half, where he was having regular episodes of enterocolitis. And at the time, we had thought he was just having gastro. It was, the symptoms present very much like gastro. I was pregnant when he was about 3. I was pregnant with our second child, and, juggling what you thought was gastro, and pregnancy at the time was just like, oh, what is going on? And so we ended up kind of speaking with his surgeon again about, okay, does he need another surgery? This was happening way too regularly for it to be something that we could actually, we understood that something needed to shift. So at the time, we saw the surgeon, and he had recommended Botox or, some kind of other form of intervention. And because my husband is very much a researcher and kind of looks into more things, and we started to kind of delve a little bit deeper, and we kind of started to look at his diet and looking at different ways that we could actually manage the enterocolitis. So we actually spoke to the surgeon, and he recommended that as an alternative, we could engage with a dietitian and a physio who he was actually connected with. And they were specialist dietitians and physios who specifically work with children with bowel diseases. So we engaged with them. And that was probably one of the most significant, life-changing points for him. So we started on a low FODMAP diet, and eliminated, glucose, fructose, and lactose. And then we did we immediately, it was probably within about a month or 6 weeks that we saw the complete stop of enterocolitis and an immediate change, because we had removed all of those. We kind of followed low FODMAP to an absolute T, and the whole family, like we were doing it as a whole family. And it was interesting because we hadn't really known about this, or there hadn't been a lot of talk about diet or low FODMAP, because a lot of the kind of research or things that we were looking at just automatically fell to surgery, kept falling to surgery. And we didn't, he was already gaining quite a lot of anxiety towards medical appointments. So we didn't want him to continue to have those experiences. And we were kind of thinking, okay, well, what can we do? Is there something else that we can do? And we obviously knew what you put into your body can really have an impact, and et cetera. So we then started the reintroduction process, very kind of strict. You'd have to do like really small portions of fructose and then only reintroduce one at a time. And, we followed the dietitian's advice on that. And it took probably, the whole process took about a year and a half. To now get to a point where we know how much gluten he can kind of manage, and then how much fructose he can manage, and how much lactose he can manage. So, for example, lactose is probably his biggest impact. So he has lactose-free, milk and yogurt, but then if there's a cake being made, it's fine in a cake. And it's the same, he'd eat an apple, where now it's kind of like, okay, we need to. Half an apple is manageable versus three apples, for example, for fructose. And it's the same with gluten. He can't have gluten for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, but he might be able to have one meal, like a pasta, but then the other meals he'll have, we have a low FODMAP, like bread here in Australia, that's specifically made for low FODMAP diets. So it's kind of like, it was a really interesting experience that we learned more about the disease as well, as to what could actually be managed for him. And we are so grateful that we avoided kind of another surgery and more kind of medical intervention and anxiety for him. And now we're at a point where it's really manageable. And there's times where we've just had the holiday season and we've had lots of food that is high in fat or high in those kind of things. And we've kind of like, well, okay, we need to pull back and we need to get back on schedule, and that's okay. We're learning as we go. So, but yeah, it's been a journey.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
No, that sounds absolutely fantastic. And what a journey as well. And there's a couple of things I'll pick up on what you said. One of which, when you said I was searching, and your husband was searching for stories. And I guess if I'd started this 6 years ago rather than 1 year ago, you might have found some stories. Which is kind of part of why I do this, is to have almost envisage the situation that you were in 7 years ago, and you're going, okay, what does life potentially, because everyone's different, potentially look like? And I think, again, if I started this 6 years ago, that might have been a bit more helpful.
And I remember trying to find podcasts at the time, and it all being medical based, or it being really limited. I had stumbled across Steph Little in terms of her Facebook page, and I engaged in that and connected with Steph, and amazing that we were, in the same state as well. So, but besides that, it was really, and I was searching for books, and there's one other children's book that is based on Hirschsprungs, and we've got that book, and that was valuable at the time as well. But there was something within me that I was like, I needed to relate more, and I wanted to provide that more to, I guess, the community. And I work with children, my profession, I'm a social worker, I work with children, this is my world in that sense. So I was really determined to kind of bring Oscar's story to other people so that they could kind of feel comfort that they're not alone, and also to kind of feel like, as hard as it was in the trenches of like, we had those thoughts of like, what's his life going to be like? What is this? What's going to be held for him in his childhood into his adult years? And really that unknown space and that feeling of fear, to be honest, as to, this is our firstborn and what's that going to look like. So I guess I wanted to provide that story of being like, it's of hope, and that they can still do amazing things regardless of this disease. And it's trying to provide I guess a bit of empowerment as well to parents and children that you can do anything regardless if you have Hirschsprungs,
Absolutely. And that's another reason why I really wanted you on, because I think we come from a very similar background in that sense, in terms of you're really trying to, not tell people what life is going to be like, because we don't know and everyone's different, but to provide that, if you are going through, as you did, as a lot of Hirschsprung's mums and dads both went through, providing that sort of, there is, a world of opportunities. You go through the surgery, obviously the pull-throughs and all of that stuff, and whilst you're going through all of that stuff that you went through, having sort of something to look forward to, I guess, and to have that hope, I think is something that is really important. There was one other thing as well that I wanted to mention. You said you were pregnant at the time when Oscar was going through a lot of surgeries. One thing that has fascinated me when doing this is genetics and sort of the possibility or probability of another child. Once you've had a child with Hirschsprungs, probability of then having another child with Hirschsprungs. Because for anybody who doesn't know my family history, I have an older brother, year older than me, who doesn't have Hirschsprungs. I do, and then I have two younger brothers that don't. So I was the lucky or unlucky one, whatever way you want to put it. Were you ever given sort of a possibility, a percentage chance, second time round?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was like, as soon as we had fallen pregnant with our second, it was the most thing that I probably thought about in my versus the pregnancy complications that I had with both the children. But it was, yeah, absolutely spoken about quite a lot, and told to us. And particularly there was a lot of strain towards us around, oh, if it's a boy, it's more likely than that the boy will get it than if it's a girl. And I don't know the stats in that, but that's what the medical professionals were telling us. And we had a girl. But I would say I was so hypervigilant for that first 24 hours post-birth. Is she going to do a poo? Like, what is it like? And at the time, because I had her in the peak of COVID, so she was born in February 2021. So our hospital system here in Perth, it went a little bit wild in the sense of like we weren't even sure if my husband was going to be able to be at the birth. Oscar wasn't able to come to the hospital. It was skeleton staff. There was, no contact, etc. So, I'd had, my second child, Neve, and my husband had to go pretty quickly. And then I'm here with, my second child, no medical staff around because also very much second child, oh, you've got it, you're fine, you don't need much support. And I'm waiting, and it got into tw like I was on the countdown, and it got to 23 hours. I'm like, she still hasn't pooed, what's going on? And then I think it was probably about, it was post 24 hours at that point. I was like, that's it, we're going PCH. And I had remember saying to the medical staff or the nursing staff, I was like, look, you may as well just transfer us now. Like, it's been 24 hours. She hasn't pooed. Can you please just get the wheels in motion? Because in my mind, I'm like, okay, this is round two. Here we go. And I think it was around probably like 26 hours or around that. And I was like, oh my God, I've taken a photo for evidence and, like, this is it, this is great. And then again, my first thought was like, oh, maybe that was just, will she do it again? And then thankfully she had, then she continued to do it and we were like, okay, we're fine, we're fine. But it was that anxiety leading up to it for the entire pregnancy and then post-birth, it really took over, to be honest. But having a different experience of that and yeah, it's just been Yeah, it consumed me for that time, to be honest. So yeah.
Definitely, definitely.
Also, we were prepared for if it was, like we were mentally like, you know what, if it is, that's okay. And we take this journey and we take it for what it is. We were not kind of wishing or hoping. It was just like it will be what it will be. And very much trying to keep an open mind to that and having the experience with Oscar, we felt more equipped. If we were going to go down that route again, I guess.
Absolutely. And I don't think anybody will quite understand the thoughts, apart from if you are a Hirschsprung's mother, of waiting for your child to poo. I don't think anybody quite grasps that like a Hirschsprung's mother does.
You're very true. That's very right.
Another point you brought up was diet as well. And that I find really, really interesting because, as I said, everybody's different when it comes to Hirschsprungs, and the sort of trials of going through the fructose and the glucose and whatnot. I just found that that was incredibly interesting. And then it was sort of because again, there was another story I had somebody on a few weeks ago who could only eat boiled potatoes. Which again, or just really, really bland food. So was that more sort of a sort of trial and error in the end, or was that sort of a specific guidelines that you were given?
Yeah, so the dietitian gave us very specific guidelines of kind of like, okay, for example, the gluten. Okay, you've got to introduce half a slice of bread for the first day, and then for 2 days do that, and then for the third day introduce two-thirds of a slice. And at that point you weren't allowed to introduce any other of the lactose or fructose. So it was very specific and very guided in that sense. And so I guess my recommendation would be always to kind of be guided by a qualified dietitian. And now because we've done that process so extensively, we can kind of like tweak it and know what works for his body, because obviously somebody else's body can be different. And the other thing is we engaged with a physio as well, who kind of taught us different ways or different movements to kind of help his bowel movements, or to help if he was, we'd kind of notice if he was gassy, and to do certain games or engage with him in a different way. Like, for example, she would say, play a game, lay on your tummy and play a board game. Notice the difference, what might happen. And we did. And it was like, oh, wow, that's a really cool trick to know. Like if he's feeling like his tummy's sore or, he's feeling a bit gassy, we'll do that. And that was a really good tip. Or, there'd be certain movements or certain ways to do things. So we probably engaged with the physio a little bit less than the dietitian, but it was still very valuable in that sense. And then they were both working really closely with his surgeon. They actually all worked at the same clinic. So it was a very helpful process that everybody was kind of communicating with each other, and everybody, was on board and knew Oscar's needs in that way.
No, that's fantastic. Always very, very helpful when departments talk to each other. Always incredibly helpful when they do. Now, as we mentioned at the beginning, you are an author of Oscar the Unstoppable, selling worldwide, and we'll talk about how you can get it a bit later on. First of all, am I right in saying that this is the one and only book that you've written? Never sort of written a book before?
No, this is my first book and would probably be my last.
Go out on a high, absolutely.
It's my first book. I'm very taken by children's books. Like when I was pregnant with Oscar, and even when we were in the hospital with Oscar, we would read to Oscar. I would have a stack of children's books on his little trolley under where he was sleeping, and we'd read to him every day. And our friends would send a lot of children's books in. And I remember going into his surgery, a friend had gifted us, this beautiful book about bravery that I had read to him just before he was being wheeled into surgery. And he still has that book now. Children's books are very special and very important to me. So that's why it just seemed like a easy, well, I wouldn't say it definitely wasn't easy, but it was something that I was like, oh, I can do this. Like, I'm passionate about it, so I can do this.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
No, absolutely fantastic. And there is a story of how everything sort of came about on your Instagram page. Then am I right again in saying that you were reading a lot of children's books to Oscar and then thought, right, now I'll write one, because there wasn't a book, or certainly not one available, about Hirschsprungs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, like we have so many books, and through his first year we were reading lots of different books, and I would go through the internet and trying to find all different books around diversity, or different books about being different and still being capable, and there is nothing I can find. And we yeah like I said, we have one children's book that I think was written by an American pair, a couple, and we had that book, and we were like, oh, I feel like there needs to be something different here. I felt like an urge that I needed to do this for Oscar, and I remember setting out. I was like, you know what? Even if it's just for him to see himself and in print, and know that he is being seen and heard in that space, and that's goal achieved, and if I can get it out to other families, then that's just a bonus. That's incredible. I wanted him to feel a sense of belonging, a sense of that he was a part of a children's book, that kind of world, that he could kind of pick up a book and be like, oh, I can relate to this, at any age. That was a really big motivation for me to kind of write it, for him to have that sense within himself.
Fantastic. No, I love the entrepreneurial spirit of there isn't something, so stuff it, I'll do it myself. I love that. I love that spirit. I think that's fantastic. And as we mentioned as well, I think you said previously that it took you quite a while to write it, get it into print. How long roughly did that all take?
It probably took about a year and a half to 2 years potentially. So I think I started writing it in, I was pregnant at the time. I think it was about 2020. Towards the end of 2020, I had just, he was 2 at the time. So, and this was when, 2 years old, he's starting to engage more, starting to really enjoy children's books. And so I just opened a Word document and I just started writing from what I knew as a parent, and along that way, so it took about 6 months before I then started to like seriously explore an illustrator. And in my mind at that point, I really wanted to obviously keep it within Australia. I was really passionate around getting an editor who was able to read it in Australia to understand our language, understand our slang, or understand, just the context of Australia. And then I really wanted to engage an illustrator who was Australian as well, because I wanted to have, or A, be on the same time zone, and B, be able to kind of have that engagement in Australia, and to support another professional who was trying to, run their own business in Australia. And I, Miranti is just, who's the illustrator, is just an incredible human being. And we worked together for over a year. And it was back and forth emails, it was Dropbox, it was, phone calls. It was a beautiful process with her, and she was so patient with me. I am a very detailed person, so it would be like, the shade of red, can it be a little bit more this? Or, can you put an extra shoelace on? Or, little, she was just so accommodating and so incredible. And as you can see from the book, it is just an incredible illustration. It is uncanny as to how much it looks like Oscar. All of our family members are like, wow, she's done such an incredible job to get it exactly like Oscar. And I also wanted to create an element of color, but softness, and to really incorporate, there's lots of little things throughout the book that are really special to us as a family. So our dog is in the book who's now passed. So we wanted to, at the time she hadn't passed, but so our dog's in the book, Oscar's special bunny's in the book. I'd provided pictures to Miranti of Oscar in that hospital, the page where Oscar's in his hospital bed, and myself and my husband Elliot looking over Oscar. She illustrated that from the picture that I sent her. So a lot of the illustrations she did were images that I had sent from our experience in hospital. Or post hospital. So yeah, I'm forever grateful for her in creating this, because it wouldn't be the book that it is if she didn't do those illustrations, to be honest. And yeah, she's just an incredible human being.
Fantastic. Well, it just sounds like a great collaboration. It wouldn't be there without the illustrations, but it wouldn't be there without your words either. So it sounds like a fantastic collaboration. And speaking about sort of the person who the book is about, how does Oscar feel about the book?
Oh, he loves it. He thinks that, particularly, when we first kind of released it, he was very much like, oh, that's me. I've got my own book. And then there'd be times where he'd kind of feel a bit, he was still kind of figuring out, like, how much do I want to, show other people in my life about this book? There's been times where he's chosen to take it to school and share it, and actually his school have it in their school library. I donated it to the school library and to all of our local libraries. I also donated copies. But he feels, really empowered by it. He loves seeing himself there. He also just loves seeing other kids hold the book and feel like a connection with another child who has Hirschsprungs on the other side of the world. And there's been lots of people who have messaged me, and Oscar and the other child have actually had video calls, or have had, connecting in a special way that they wouldn't have had that connection if the book wasn't there. And I think that's what he loves most about it, is that sense of belonging, but that sense of connection with other children with Hirschsprungs all over the world, is what I think holds a special place in his heart. So, yeah.
No, that's fantastic. That's brilliant. And you just spoke about the release of the book as well. It took sort of about a year and a half to do. And you had a special release day or a special release date in mind. Would you like to talk about sort of when that was and why you chose that specific date?
Yeah, absolutely. So, it was we were kind of at the top, we were tying up the book. It was kind of January 2022, and in my mind, I'm like, okay, what are the things? Sorry, tying up the illustrations. So in my mind, I was like, okay, what else do I need to do? And then I was kind of projecting the months forward. Okay, I needed it edited again. I needed it formatted, etc. And again, I was still really passionate about engaging a formatter within Australia, which engaged an incredible one. And so as the day got closer, I was like, hold on, I want to release this book on Oscar Surgery Day. Like, I want this to be a really momentous experience for us, a personal experience for us to kind of shift. Okay, he had his surgery and that was the biggest life-changing day for him. But how about we release it on the same day? So yes, it was released in April 2022. And COVID was a blessing in a sense because it allowed a year for me and Miranti to kind of be going back and forth and to be working on this book when in 2021, when, the world had kind of shut down, it was like, oh, well, we may as well just write a book. So it was, I'm not sure if the book would have been released when it was, if it wasn't the lockdown situation that we were in, because we had a lot of time at home and a lot of time to review. So yeah, it will be nearly 3 years since the book has been released coming up, which has just flown by, to be honest.
That's fantastic. And yeah, I have to remember it's 2025 as well. But that's it's yeah, time has really flown. Really flown. But it was a quote as well that you wrote on your Instagram when you're telling all about the story, that I loved, that I'd love you to expand, and I'll share it as well. That when you were packing up the books ready to send or whatever, Oscar said to you, and I quote from your Instagram, "Do all of these people love me?" Which I thought was amazing. Just really amazing.
He absolutely just loves the connection with other people. And, every time, I've got a particular envelope that I send it in. So as soon as the envelope's out, I'm like, who's bought my book? Where do they live? What's their name? How old are they? Like wanting to know everything. I'm like, okay, I don't know, all over the world and different ages. I have a lot of teachers who purchase the book because they want to share it with their students, or I have libraries who purchase a book, or I have a lot of medical professionals and they'll email and say, hey, I'm a surgeon in, Ohio in America. I want to, I've purchased your book. I'm sharing it with my patients. Every single order that comes through, Oscar is aware of. We let him, I let him know who they are. And generally, if I kind of know who they are, I'll let them know. And a really special experience that we're now able to do is Oscar. So if I'm sending the book from my website, Oscar handwrites the notes to the buyer. So he will write a little blurb on the back of the flyer thanking them, and sometimes he writes a novel, and then sometimes he loves to choose the lollies that go in. Like, we send a little mentor in there, and he might sneak one and puts one in the envelope, and then we often go to the post office together and post it. So it's a really special experience. If people are buying in Australia, then hoping that they're buying from my website so we can do that special experience for him. But in saying that, he just loves seeing from Instagram or from the Facebook groups that all the different people who are reading the book, or it will, is that baby reading my book, or is that, teenager, or whatever that looks like.
That's
So yeah,
fantastic.
and because when we go to our local library, often I will search the book and see if it's in or out. Or, you know, and there was a time where I'd searched and been like, oh, reserved 3 times. I'm like, who's reserving this book? It's in high demand. It's probably just my family and friends. But yeah, it's just such a surreal experience, I think, for all of us involved, to be able to have this opportunity to share Oscar's story with the world.
Absolutely. And I on a slightly lower level, I think I do sort of understand where you're coming from when I think, who's listening to the podcast? It probably just is my mum and dad. But I kind of, think, where are they listening from? And all of this, that, the other. And a question I probably should have asked a little bit earlier on. But with the book itself, I know we talked a little bit about it's Oscar's story and his journey. If you were to sum up the book in sort of a few sentences, what would you say if someone said to you, well, what's it all about?
Yeah, absolutely. Unstoppable is about sharing what Hirschsprungs can be in a really child and simple terms, but also focusing on how a child with Hirschsprungs disease can do anything. It's not going to stop them from playing basketball, or it's not going to stop them from reaching their goals. And I really wanted to write a book that was empowering for children with Hirschsprungs disease and their families and their siblings and their peers, and to normalize and to bring awareness to the disease and to really celebrate it as well, and to really showcase it in a really positive light, and to bring hope to families and to children, and to be honest, for the children with Hirschsprung's disease to feel seen and heard, within a children books collection, I guess, in a sense of, often children will pick up books and be able to identify with that. And I think because there is such limited books out there on Hirschsprung's disease, that this is a book that they can pick up and feel a connection to, and they can feel like they can relate to somebody, and there's somebody else out there like me. And that's probably one of the biggest feedback I've got, is that children are reading this book and feeling like, oh wow, Oscar's like me, Oscar's my friend, or I've got scars like Oscar, or yeah, I like to play basketball, and Hirschsprungs doesn't stop me from playing basketball. So it's really a book about connection and relation and empowerment and feeling seen and heard for them as little warriors of Hirschsprungs. So yeah.
Absolutely fantastic, and that's a wonderful, wonderful sentiment that we'll conclude on. And just very quickly, a couple of things just before we wrap up. Where can people find you, and where can people buy the book from?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're in Australia, I would recommend, if you want to get a little note from Oscar, that you purchase it from OscarTheUnstoppable.com. So unfortunately, I only ship within Australia just because of postage costs. The next recommendation for worldwide would be Amazon. So it's a print-on-demand service. So, for example, if you're ordering in London or the UK, then it's actually printed in the UK, and it's shipped to you from your local dispatching Amazon service. So it's actually a pretty quick turnaround. But obviously, you don't get the little personalized note, which is completely fine. And that's the reason why I have it available worldwide, because it's not about an income, or it's not about making money for us. It is about awareness and getting it out into the community and for children to feel seen and heard. So that's why we have it available on Amazon, so it's more accessible to the world, really. And that's what it's about for us. It's about a community and raising that awareness.
Absolutely. And on Instagram, where can people follow you?
Yes, so it is Oscar underscore the, sorry. Oscar underscore the underscore unstoppable. And yeah, you'll see little Oscar's Mirante's illustration in the little tile. You'll know that you've landed in the right space. So, and please, anybody who is reading the book or sharing the book, I would love for you to contact me and, either in the DMs or flicking me an email from the website, because every single story that comes through to me, I share with Oscar, and he feels so much more connected to the world, and he is so excited to travel the world. And I think a big reason of that is because of those who are reading the book, and he's excited to see where all these people live and in be a globetrotter, essentially.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Thank you ever so much for everything that you do and Oscar as well. And thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's underscore Hirschsprungs underscore podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll bring you another episode soon.